Hello, beautiful people. This is the Michael Slate Show, and I am your guest host, Sansara Taylor. On today's show, we'll be sharing segments from the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show, which airs on YouTube. But before we get into that, I have incredible, exciting, tremendous news. Bob Avakian, the revolutionary leader, the author and architect of a whole new framework for human emancipation, what we call the New Communism, is out now on social media, at Bob Avakian Official on all the platforms. He's bringing his voice and world-class leadership to the public square, telling people the truth they need to hear and fighting for revolution. And he is straight up at this historic time, putting himself forward because he is a leader who can lead us through this crazy morass and intensifying nightmare and crisis of this system to wrench out a real revolution. True emancipation for all of humanity. So don't miss this. If you're on TikTok, Instagram, X, formerly known as Twitter, all the social media platforms, look for at Bob Avakian Official, and you can find him bringing you the truth, hard-hitting, not watered down, the truth you need regularly. Don't miss it. The other thing I want to highlight for you is that the full RNL Revolution Nothing Less show is available at youtube.com/therevcoms. And on that channel, you can find the full, complete, historic three-part series interview that I did with Bob Avakian together with my co-host there, Andy Z. We interviewed Bob Avakian extensively. He spoke about his life. He opened up his heart, his history, his personal development, but also his political development. He explored the lessons and formative experience that he draws from working closely with the Black Panther Party in their most revolutionary days. He gets into how he went from being a patriotic American, thankful that he was born in what he believed was this greatest of all countries, to somebody who has become an ardent critic of this country and everything it stands for and everything it does in the world down to today, and the most fiercest advocate for an actual revolution and fighter for this revolution to bring about a world without everything America stands for and true emancipation for all of humanity. He gets into the strategy for this revolution. He gets into the future society, what it needs to look like. He gets into all the things that are holding people back, from those who are catching the hardest hell at the bottom of this society to the students on the campuses with the woke lunacy that's taking hold, but also reaching people's highest aspirations for a radically different world. He does all of this and more, gets into the poetic spirit, gets into all of this, but he is hardcore for a real revolution. And there is nothing like this journey, like these interviews. So I recommend you go to youtube.com/therevcoms. You can also find them at the website revcom.us, where you will find hundreds of articles, audio, other clips about this revolution and from this revolutionary leader, Bob Avakian. There are very few people in the public square or not in the public square who would say that these are normal times, or times even close to normal, whatever that has meant. But very few realize that this is one of those rare times when revolution is more possible. And for the sake of humanity and the planet, we need to seize this moment so the resources I just gave you are indispensable in the situation we are in. So with that, let's begin with the opening commentary from the Revolution Nothing Less show. My name is Sansara Taylor, and I'm very pleased to be joined in studio today by Rafael Cadaris. Welcome, Rafael.
Thanks, Sansara. It's good to be here. This is a show about an actual revolution, a revolution to overthrow this whole capitalist imperialist system that we're forced to live in and bring into being a completely different system, a much better system, a socialist system on the road to a communist world without oppression or exploitation in any form. And, you know, there are a million reasons that we need a revolution. This is a big one. Watch this.
The tragic death of a teenager with autism sparking outrage.
Today, the community is rallying around the family of 15-year-old Ryan Gaynor. The teen was shot and killed by a San Bernardino County Sheriff's deputy earlier this month.
Where is he at? Look out. Hey, get back! Get back! You're getting shot! Get back in the residence right now! Get back to the residence right now! We're gonna give him help! We're gonna give him help! We're gonna give him help! Get back in the residence!
What's a hula hoop gonna do? The way he had it in his hand, he had it handled like that, and he had a frying pan here. So how much damage would he have done to him? You're talking about two big cops that have trained, have buffed up. You couldn't tackle him? We'd rather for him to have a broken arm, broken leg, but to be dead at 15? No. No, it just don't make no sense.
Why do you think they have this battle?
Because he's black.
Described as a happy kid, but he had his challenges. 15-year-old Ryan Gaynor was diagnosed with autism and Crohn's disease, but his adoptive father, Norman, says he flourished as he got older.
I get to sleep at night because all I think about is Ryan. It's just, Ryan, he did so much. People don't realize he would work at Million Mile Kids. He was teaching kids robotics. He was teaching kids chess. He was a mentor to younger kids.
To all the viewers, make sure you have a great day, be the spark, and make sure to spread kindness.
How many more times does this have to happen? How many more times do the tears and the cries of anguish and anger have to pour forth from the wounded hearts of people? How many more times, when another of these outrageous murders is perpetrated by the police, do we have to hear those words that pour gasoline on the already burning wounds? Justifiable homicide, justified use of force by police. How many more? Ramar Lee Graham, Nicholas Hayward Jr., Tamir Rice, Eric Garner, Darius Pinex, Oscar Grant, Manuel Diaz, Joel Acevedo, Laquan McDonald, Ayanna Stanley Jones, Sandra Bland, Jack Sun, Rennie Davis, Michael Brown, Freddie Gray, Maurice Granton, Harith Augustus. The list goes on and on and on. Thousands and thousands, especially Black and Latino and Native American. If this were the only thing wrong with this system, it would be more than enough reason to sweep it off the earth.
So what you just saw in that clip was just some footage from the cold-blooded police murder of Ryan Gaynor, a 15-year-old autistic young man, by San Bernardino sheriffs. You know, and as Bob Avakian said in that the clip that followed, if this were the only thing that was wrong with this system, it would be reason enough to sweep it off the face of the earth.
In today's show, we're going to share more from the family of Ryan Gaynor, from a press conference they held that the LA RevComs, that is Revolutionary Communists, went out to. We're also going to bring you more from Bob Avakian, who you just heard from briefly. Bob Avakian, you should know, is the revolutionary leader who has developed a whole new framework for human emancipation, what we call the new communism. He is hardcore for a real revolution, and he's brought forward the scientific methodology, the vision of a whole new liberated society, the strategy to make a revolution, and he is providing the leadership to make this real in these times. And one of the things that is most distinctive about him through his whole life and development from a very early age is his deep connection to Black people and to the struggle for their liberation. And as he's developed this new communism, he's deepened our understanding, humanity's understanding, of how closely the fight for the liberation of Black people is bound up with the fight to make revolution to emancipate all of humanity. So in today's show, we are also at the heart of the show going to share an excerpt where he goes very deeply in a speech into why you cannot end white supremacy without overthrowing capitalism, how they're bound together and how we need to make revolution to abolish both.
So later in the show, we're going to be talking about the repression that's coming down now on pro-Palestinian voices speaking out against the U.S.-backed genocide in Gaza. And we're going to be talking about a protest that happened recently at UCLA against the UC University of California Board of Regents.
So before we dive into all of this, we want to give a fuller sense of the scope of this revolution with one more short clip from Bob Avakian.
Why are Black people, Latinos, and Native Americans subjected to genocidal persecution, mass incarceration, police brutality, and murder? Why is there the patriarchal degradation, dehumanization, and subjugation of all women everywhere? And oppression based on gender or sexual orientation? Why are there wars of empire, armies of occupation, and crimes against humanity? Why is there the demonization, criminalization, and deportations of immigrants and the militarization of the border? Why is the environment of our planet being destroyed? There is one fundamental reason. The basic nature of the system of capitalism, imperialism that we live under, and the way, because of its very nature, it continually perpetrates and perpetuates horror after horror. And in fundamental terms, we have two choices. Either live with all this and condemn future generations to the same or worse, if they have a future at all, or make revolution.
So Raphael, we started with this clip, this really beautiful clip of a glowing, I mean, really sweet young Black youth, Ryan Gaynor, talking about how you should be the spark you want to see in the world. Somebody who's just got an incredible smile. He's a young man with autism, and he was experiencing a breakdown, some kind of mental breakdown, an episode, and his family called for emergency line for help. And they've done this before. They called for help. The police came. And instead of offering help, they did what has happened way too many times to way too many families, and especially disproportionately to Black families, to Native American families, Latino families. Instead of bringing help, they shot this child dead in front of his family. It is a nightmare that they had to go through.
It's really sickening. You know, I mean, I just about lost it like multiple times watching these videos, watching the family speak at this press conference. This should not go on any longer. This was the fifth time this family called the police for help. They knew exactly what was going on. They knew about Ryan Gaynor.
The police knew.
They knew he was having a mental breakdown, you know, but from the minute they arrived there, you know, with their guns out, when they showed up, you know, they didn't treat Ryan as someone to be helped. They treated Ryan as someone to be put down, a dangerous threat to be put down, you know, despite the fact that, as his aunt said at the beginning, he just had a gardening tool and a frying pan, and the police could have dealt with this so many other kind of ways. And we'll get more into this when we hear from the family in a minute, you know, but it just tells you so much about this country and about the way the inhumanity that Black people are treated with, you know, when they have to deal with these police, you know. And even after they shot Ryan, you know, there and his family members are saying, why did you shoot my baby? You know, they're telling them, get back, stay away. Like they didn't. And then it took another like 60 seconds before they even tried to, you know, administer any, you know, medical care towards Ryan. You know, it's just, you know, and then we'll hear from the family members describing what the family went through after that. You know, how they themselves were faced with arrest.
We're going to play more from the press conference where his aunt, his father spoke, where some of the members of the Los Angeles RevCom Corps for the Emancipation of Humanity went out, filmed this press conference, interviewed the family. We're going to bring you more of that. But one other thing I want to note before we do is that the San Bernardino sheriffs actually put out a press release that described this incident where they cut this kid down in cold blood as an encounter where they put this, I want to quote it, attempted murder of peace officer. Think about that. Attempted murder, like this 15-year-old attempted murder on a peace officer. It's the exact opposite. These were not peace officers. These were murdering thugs. They're the violent ones. And they were the ones who carried out the murder. And even after the fact, even caught on camera, this is how they're telling it to the world. This has got to stop. I think we should go to the press conference, hear from the family. Do you want to describe what we're going to share?
So we're going to hear from Ryan Gaynor's father, who, you know, describes what kind of person Ryan was and his struggles growing up, but also how he came to flourish as a young man. And then until he was cut down. Then we're going to talk about, then we're going to hear from his aunt, who describes the way the family was treated and how this needs to stop.
Just to tell you who Ryan was and all the things he overcame. In 2010, we did foster to adopt, and we adopted Ryan. The adoption was final in 2011. When we first met Ryan, he had a helmet on his hand. They said he was prone to falling. The first thing I did, I got rid of the helmet. And Ryan was a drug exposure and alcohol fetal syndrome. And Ryan was a speech delay. Ryan could not speak. And we was like, how are we gonna communicate with this kid? How are we gonna communicate with this kid? So we taught him sign language, just to communicate that he can tell us if he's hungry or he's not hungry. And we took him to our home when they allowed us to take to our home, and then we discussed it with my wife and my daughters about should we adopt, should we not adopt, because he had a lot of issues. And then my daughter said, why would you bring him home if you don't want to adopt him? And she said, we all got issues. And then after she said that, we agreed to adopt him. Then he started talking. It's like, wow, thank God. He started talking, he started communicating, he started flourishing. And he went through so much. It was so much he dealt with. And this at the age of 3. He dealt with so much, and then they diagnosed it with seizures. He was having fibro seizures, you know. And then later on, they diagnosed with Crohn's disease. He wasn't able to control his bowel movement or his urine movement. And he was strong. He was always happy no matter what he was going through. He was always a happy child. Even in school, the battles Ryan fought. Going to school and kids teasing because he had to wear pull-ups because he had Crohn's disease. We had to deal with that. But he was always happy. He just wanted to be treated the same. Anyone can tell you how our son just flourished. He loved to talk, from not talking to talking all the time. And he was so smart. I said, I gotta Google it, son. And when he liked it, the Lakers, he liked it, San Francisco, he liked it, the Dodgers, but he knew all the stats. So I'm like, how do you keep up with all that? He was like, had a sponge in his brain. What's a sponge? When every time we get off of school, call me. He's like, Dad, I'm home, this is Ryan. I said, how was your day, Ryan? He said, my day was good. Some days was good, some days was bad. And I said, Ryan, do you have any homework? I said, do your homework first and do your chores. And after you do your chores, you can have your computer time. So that's the Ryan I know. That's the Ryan I remember. That's the Ryan that I miss. I can't even sleep at night because all I think about is Ryan. It's just, Ryan, he did so much. People don't realize, if you knew Ryan, you love Ryan. People that said these negative things, they don't know Ryan. Ryan I had never heard a bad word from anybody in the community about Ryan.
The morning my sister called me, she was just screaming on the phone, they shot my baby. And I go down to the police station because I find out that they got my sister down at the police station for 3.5 hours. So I called on that phone and I said, why are you got my sister down here? She needs to talk to the detective. No, she doesn't. Right. She didn't shoot him.
Right.
Why is she being held in a jailhouse? She didn't shoot him. Then after we go to the hospital, after they gave us the false pretense that my nephew was still alive, we get pulled into a room and they tell us. The doctor says, when he came in, he had no pulse. He said, but I opened him up and his heart had no heartbeat. So I told that detective, you call down to that jail cell and you tell them to release my sister right now. And I go back down there, and now they're playing games. Oh, who are you talking about? What's her name again? Then as my sister's trying to roll, my niece is trying to roll my sister out, the detective, the police officer is standing in front of my sister, preventing her to come out. And guess who had to tell my sister that her baby was dead? I did. I had to tell my sister that my nephew that was over to my house at Christmas time when we had our dinner, that he was no longer here. When I say a gentle young man would not hurt a flea. So my question to the police is, you could have did a thousand other things. Right. You could have tackled him.
Right.
You could have tased him. You could have pepper sprayed him. There was a whole lot of things you could have did. The system needs to change. Because if not, we'll be having this press conference again at somebody else's house. Somebody else's mama will be standing in front of here crying about their baby or somebody's aunt or cousin. Change needs to happen. And it needs to happen now. We've had enough of this.
Right.
And I'm not sorry for what I'm saying, but I'm telling you it's happened to the black community more than it's happened to anybody else. We are burying more than anybody. And now we gotta bury my nephew. I don't wanna bury my nephew, but we can't bring him back, so we have to. But why? That's my question, why?
In watching that, you feel the agony that this family has been put through. And that so many families have been put through whose loved ones have been murdered by police. And Ryan Gaynor's aunt, Sheila, is exactly right when she says this is happening disproportionately to black people. It's also happening disproportionately to Native American people and Latino people. And this needs to stop, or else it will be exactly like she said, another family standing in front of their home, pouring out their tears yet again. This murder after murder by police needs to stop. And we need to do exactly what she said at the end. We need to be asking the question, why does this keep happening? Why is it going on? This needless, senseless murder. And if it were easy to answer that question, we would have had a change that we need by now. We would have seen the kind of change we need. And people have tried. They have stood up. They have protested. They have rebelled. And we need much more of that. But a lot of this has been funneled into things that have not gotten to the root of the problem. We've seen body cameras put on police. We've seen sensitivity trainings. We've seen police review boards. We've seen all kinds of reforms, but we have not seen this stop. In fact, 2023 saw the highest rate of police murder in years, actually ever. So this is going up, not down. So to get to the root of why this keeps happening and why only an actual revolution, only the overthrow of the system that we live under can put an end to this murder by police, even as we should be standing up and protesting and resisting this now, we want to go to something from Bob Avakian, where he goes into this deeply and scientifically in a way that no one else has in his speech, why we need an actual revolution and how we can really make revolution. How white supremacy and capitalism are woven together, and to end one, you have to end both. Let's watch.
The oppression of black people and other people of color. This system in this country was founded in genocide and slavery. From the beginning, African Americans and Native Americans were treated as pariahs, a caste of people less than human and not deserving of the same rights and opportunities as the European settlers of the territory. White supremacy was poured into the foundation and into every institution of the country. The uniting of the United States was accomplished through the compromise written into the founding Constitution that institutionalized slavery. And for generations, slave labor produced a great part of the wealth of this country. As I said in Basics 1-1, there would be no United States as we now know it today without slavery. That is a simple and basic truth. And then, when it was no longer possible to contain the conflicts that had been somewhat held in check by the founding compromise, the Civil War erupted between the southern slave states and the northern states, which increasingly were based on the exploitation of wage labor by capitalists. But shortly after the end of this Civil War, another compromise was engineered. which was a continuation of the original compromise under the new conditions. The country was put back together on the basis of reaffirming and reinforcing white supremacy. With the masses of black people still overwhelmingly in the South, subjugated and terrorized into second-class citizen status, exploited in conditions of near slavery and sometimes still literal slavery by white plantation and other property owners. And the land and way of life of the native peoples was further stolen through armed conquest and decimated by slaughter, confinement in reservations, and cultural genocide, which has resulted in the poverty, oppression, and repression that continues to be inflicted on Native Americans to this day. Under slavery, it was the armed patrols and militias organized by the slave owners that hunted down slaves who rebelled or just tried to escape and terrorized the masses of black people as a whole. After slavery, with Jim Crow segregation, it was the Ku Klux Klan, together with local sheriffs, who largely played this role. Today, in the conditions in which masses of black people in the ghettos of the inner cities find themselves, the role that was played in the past by the slave patrols, and then the Ku Klux Klan and local sheriffs, is now carried out by heavily armed urban police forces. This is a big part of the overall role of the police, which, as I said in Basics 124, is not to serve and protect the people. It is to serve and protect the system that rules over the people, to enforce the relations of exploitation and oppression, the conditions of poverty, misery, and degradation into which the system has cast people and is determined to keep people in. The law and order the police are about, with all their brutality and murder, is the law and order that enforces all this oppression and madness. In the days of slavery and then Jim Crow segregation after the Civil War, the oppressors viciously exploited and terrorized black people, brutally murdering those they saw as posing a threat or not staying in their place. But they did not kill off or incarcerate a huge part of the black population because their labor was needed as a backbone and crucial source of profit for the cotton plantations and the overall economy in the South and the country as a whole. Today, with great numbers of black people concentrated in the inner cities, and with many factories and other capitalist enterprises having moved away from the urban cores, the police have killed thousands of black people in the last few decades, and they play a key part in forcibly maintaining masses of black people in a situation where, especially youth, robbed of any decent future under this system, are killing each other in the thousands, and millions are either incarcerated or in some other way under the control of the so-called justice system. Because white supremacy is such a defining part of this country, it is not just African Americans and Native Americans, but people of color generally who are subjected to discrimination, degradation, and brutality. And this applies now in acute ways to those whose roots lie in Mexico, El Salvador, and other parts of Central America and the Caribbean, which are tightly ensnared in a net of domination and exploitation by the imperialists of the USA, whose ravaging of these countries has driven many to emigrate to the U.S. itself. White supremacy and capitalism, they have been completely interwoven and tightly stitched together through the whole development of this country down to today. To attempt to really put an end to white supremacy while maintaining the system of capitalism would tear the entire fabric of the country apart. White supremacy and capitalism. It is not possible to overcome and finally abolish the one without overthrowing and finally abolishing the other.
You are listening to The Michael Slate Show. We're going to take a short musical break and be right back.
Providing airdrops of additional food and supplies.
بدونا رقيق خبز وبدونا سندويش وبدوا الاسرائيليين صاروخ ودبابه وطياره.
One in six children under the age of two in the north of Gaza are now acutely malnourished. This is the fastest decline in a population's nutrition status ever recorded. Children are being starved, the fastest rate the world has ever seen.
Half of Gaza, which is more than a million people, are on the brink of catastrophic hunger.
Why, next Monday, we'll have a ceasefire.
The latest coming in from the World Health Organization that children are now dying of starvation.
For the second time this month, the Biden administration bypassed Congress and approved an emergency weapons sale to Israel of high explosive artillery, munitions, and related equipment.
אנחנו מוכנים, אל תעשו טעויות. רמדאן כרים.
One of the most howling and screaming crimes of this system today is the outright genocide being perpetrated against the people of Gaza, backed to the teeth, armed, funded by the U.S., carried out by Israel. And we're watching in real time the starvation of children, of families, the invasions of hospitals, the blocking of food, of fuel, of water. This is just the devastation systematically of any ability to sustain life for 1.5 to 2 million people. With over 32,000 have been killed already. Now, it's really important that there's been tremendous protests, tremendous cries for justice. People have stood up and Jewish voices have spoken out, different kinds of people. There needs to be much more of this. But you would think if we really did live in this so-called great democracy where the voices of the people decide what happens, that the rulers would be listening. But instead, you have Biden, bloody-jawed Biden, Genocide Joe, doubling down, and the whole ruling class of this country doubling down and backing Israel and cracking down on those who are standing up. And this is a contradiction that people need to see to the essence of this actual system, a dictatorship, what this country really is about. And it's something we have to talk some about.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the main concentration points for this whole question is on the college campuses, the universities, where you have seen really an unprecedented since the 1960s, like an uprising of students, you know, Palestinian students, Arab and Muslim students, progressive Jewish students that don't want this genocide being done in their name, and others, you know, on the campuses rising up, protesting, doing sit-ins, all this kind of thing. But you also see at the same time, you know, a vicious crackdown. You know, we've seen, you know, presidents of major Ivy League schools, Harvard, UPenn, driven out of office by fascist witch trials in the Senate. You've seen at Columbia University in New York, you saw the Students for Justice in Palestine and Jewish Voice for Peace chapters being literally banned. You have students being doxxed, students being blacklisted, prevented from future employment. And, you know, students just criticizing Israel are accused of anti-Semitism. It's completely upside down. Let's be clear, anti-Zionism is not anti-Semitism. But this is what's going on, and the kind of repression that's going on these campuses. And, you know, at UC, in the UC system, you know, where it hasn't been quite as bad as on some of the East Coast schools, mm-hmm. but now the University of California is proposing a bill. It's called J1 is the item title, but it would basically censor the home pages of academic departments from saying anything quote unquote political or anything quote unquote controversial. And in case it wasn't clear who this proposed policy is targeting, the person who wrote it explicitly said that calling the Israeli assault on Gaza a genocide is inflammatory and out of touch rhetoric.
Yeah, that's it's called speaking the truth. And it's what is supposedly supposed to happen on college campuses. You're supposed to examine the evidence, test out ideas, contest them, have a free exchange. But that's not what's happening. Bob Avakian, in his recent social media posts, has gone into what is behind, what is driving this crackdown on pro-Palestinian voices overall, but also on the elite universities in particular. We want to play an excerpt for you.
Why is this happening? Because fundamental interests of U.S. capitalism and imperialism are at stake. Because Israel plays a special role as a heavily armed bastion of support for U.S. imperialism in a strategically important part of the world, the Middle East. And Israel has been a key force in the commission of atrocities which have helped to maintain the oppressive rule of U.S. imperialism in many other parts of the world. And this repression is happening because representatives of the ruling class in this country have a definite sense that if youth, especially at elite universities, begin to seriously question and act against what this system is doing, if the system loses the allegiance of large numbers of those students, that can be a big factor in creating a real crisis for the system as a whole, as happened in the 1960s. A crisis that now more than ever, this system really cannot afford when the whole country is already being torn apart by deep divisions with bitter clashes right among the ruling powers. So, at the same time as they are bitterly divided, the ruling powers of this country are firmly united in their determination to punish and intimidate, especially students at elite universities who have stepped forward to protest the genocidal slaughter of Palestinians. The ruling class is desperate to prevent opposition to its fundamental interests from spreading and involving masses of people from all parts of society. All this reveals more nakedly than in normal situations, the actual dictatorship behind the outer shell of democracy of this country. And it shines a light on the strategic weakness of this system when it does lose the allegiance of major sections of the people. And this has the potential to spread to all parts of society, including among the dominant institutions of this system.
So that was from number 17 of Babovakian's dispatches on social media. And he's providing real-time leadership on what's developing in the world and how to understand it. And one of the things that's so striking to me that we've been reflecting on is it's easy to see the strength of U.S. imperialism, of Israel, as they carry out this massive slaughter, just raining it down on the people of Palestine and Gaza in particular. It's easy to see the repressive power of these fascist Congress people driving out presidents of universities, the repression that's coming down on the students. And Babovakian speaks to that, and he speaks to the dictatorship that's being exposed, the fundamental nature of the system as a dictatorship, not a so-called great democracy, or actually a bourgeois democracy that covers over the essential bourgeois capitalist dictatorship that we live under. But Babovakian also looks at the other side of that I think is easier to miss and that most people miss, which is that this system has a lot of vulnerability when it's exposed in this way. And it's really worried at a time when the rulers are so divided, as he spoke about losing the allegiance of especially students at the elite universities, but also the way that could spread, the way it spread in the 60s, and the way you are seeing contours of how it could spread in this country, even into the ruling institutions themselves. You see people disaffecting from within the Biden administration, from within the structures of power. And yes, they have strength, but they are not all powerful. And I think Babovakian is shining a light on some of the vulnerability of the system and where the revolution could take advantage of that.
Yeah, so I think that's in that light, you can see the importance of the fact that, you know, people, when this J1 proposal to crack down on pro-Palestinian anti-genocide expression in the University of California system came down, you know, close to 100 students came out to protest this recently. Me and some other people were out there in the middle of this. We'll show you some footage of what happened in a minute. But, you know, it was important that students from all over California, from Students for Justice in Palestine and different coalitions aiming to divest, their universities from, corporations that provide weapons for Israel and stuff. There was a bunch of these coalitions came out to UCLA to protest the UC Regents meeting where they were going to vote on this. And the night before the main discussion of this in the UC Regents meeting, students occupied the hotel where the Regents thing was happening. They, you know, dozens of police from like at least five major cop divisions showed up in riot gear and kicked them out, you know, but then
brutally kicked them out,
choked students, all this. But then students came back and they set up a tent encampment right outside the conference center. And then the next day, people came out and marched right into the Regents meeting to protest against this J1 fascist repressive policy. So let's watch.
REFCOMS united with pro-Palestine student groups to protest UC Board of Regents meeting.
We have made it crystal clear that preserving academic freedom and freedom of speech are absolutely imperative as we put a policy in place.
How dare you consider this? This university is fascist! All the way out here is speech!
They talk about academic freedom and they shut down when people raise actual objective truth about the genocide this system is committing, and these institutions are silencing any protest and suppressing pro-Palestinian and anti-genocide voices.
1 million Palestinians are on the brink of famine. So many of them have already died from malnutrition. We know that this is a genocide, and you guys are f***ing cowards.
That's right.
For just exiting a room because we are criticizing the way you're suppressing speech. All you are just arms of the U.S. Empire and will not stand for it.
Right here, this tells you, this is not a democracy for all, as we're always told. This is a dictatorship of this system, and Israel represents the vital interests of U.S. imperialism. It's not just the Jewish lobby. It's not just a few corporations. It's this system of imperialism and capitalism, and it needs to be overthrown.
So based on the disruption, we've been asked to ask anybody who does not want to be arrested to leave.
No justice, no peace. We want a free speech. You see, you see, you can't hide.
We charge you with murder.
We charge you with genocide.
Look, it was really good that there was 100 or so students out there in finals week, no less. And it was really good you were out there with some of the other RevComs. But this needs to be even more powerfully protested and resisted. And people need to come back out and stand up again in mass numbers against this genocide. At the same time, we have to be digging into why this is happening and how it can be ended. I know that you got into some of this with some of the students out there.
Yeah, you know, and one thing you could see in the video is students had a lot of heart. You know, the students that were there, they were not backing down, you know, and it's important that in May, when this J1 proposal comes back up to be voted on, that people come back even stronger with even more people. But I will say, you know, it's also, like you said, it's important we dig deeper into what's really at the root of this. You know, I asked a lot of students when I was out there, like, how do you understand why all this repression is coming down nationwide on people speaking out, speaking the truth about this genocide? Why do you think Biden is backing this continuing to back this genocide, even if it might cost him the election? And a number of people, students I talked to, literally just had no idea. And we're, you know, interested in learning more about this. Some students had this theory that a lot of it had to do with the military-industrial complex and these weapons manufacturers who were buying off politicians, buying off university administrations. There were other students who talked about, who talked about revolution and even talked about imperialism, but didn't have a very deep understanding of that and tended to, you know, view revolution as basically the same as protesting, the same as just more resistance. So these are really important questions for us to get in there and clarify. Like, there's actually a capitalist imperialist system at the root of this that's driving this genocide, that's driving these university administrations to crack down on anyone that threatens the, you know, that they perceive to threaten the, you know, vital interests of this U.S. empire. And the only solution is we have to get rid of this system. We have to overthrow it through an actual revolution, which means defeating, dismantling all the armed forces of violent repression that enforce this order and replacing it with a completely different socialist system based on the Constitution for the New Socialist Republic in North America. So, you know, written by Bob Avakian. So these are big questions we got to keep getting into.
Yeah, I think it's important. We need to take this out to the campuses very vigorously, out in society. And I'm glad you were out there. I'm glad others were out there. We wanted to end the show. We have a couple things we want to share before the end, but we really want to drive home. We played just an excerpt from Bob Avakian's social media number 17, where he talks about this repression on the campuses. One of the questions you raised, why does Biden keep backing this genocide, even though it could cost him the election? That's something Bob Avakian answers in these social medias. He goes into the very questions you're talking about. What is a system? What is this system? Why is it the source of the problems we're facing? You know, he starts right out by saying, if you don't know why we need a revolution and how this revolution can be made, you don't know what you need to know. And then he breaks down exactly what you don't know and what you need to know to understand what's happening in the world and how we can act together to change it. And particularly, it's at Bob Avakian Official. That's the social media handle. Every social media platform, if you're not following, we want to encourage you to follow now, but also to spread these. And in particularly 1 through 11, his first 11 social media dispatches as a coherent whole, really bring you into the foundation of what you need to understand. Digging into those, digging into them with others, spreading them, this can make a huge difference. And then the ongoing real-time leadership that he is providing with new dispatches regularly.
On the real-time leadership, I will also say that Bob Avakian Official the dispatch number 16, he directly addresses a question that came up from a UCLA student who raised that his critique of America lacked nuance. So go watch that at Babovakian Official number 16.
Yeah. And
how he responds to that.
Yeah. And the more that, you know, the more that people get into these questions, the more we're going to be able to have growing numbers in this country acting in a unified way, in a direction that actually can take advantage of the splits and the divides in this system among the rulers and throughout society that is only going to grow more intense. Take advantage of the way the rulers are split and divided to seize on this, to put forward the interests of the people here and the billions around the world, to get rid of this system, to make a real revolution. This is the guidance that Babovakian is providing. And so these, as well as the interviews that we did here on this channel with Babovakian, going deeply into the character of this revolution, where you get to know him, this extraordinary revolutionary leader. These are tremendous resources that we want to urge you to take advantage of here on our channel and to spread everywhere. These will make a big difference in these very, very tumultuous times with so much at stake and so much possibility if we could make a real revolution through this. So we wanted to highlight that before we end the show. There's one other thing we wanted to share before we close out.
So we've been talking a lot about what's wrong, what's these huge problems caused by this system, the genocide in Gaza, the repression of pro-Palestinian voices, the police murder after murder after murder, including of, you know, people with mental health issues. So we're going to go to a clip from Babovakian that'll lift your sights to what could be possible if we had state power through an actual revolution. So let's watch.
When you get a whole different system, then as I've said before, if you have a, you know, there are still going to be people who, you know, have mental problems, go crazy, go off. Or so how do you handle that? Let's say we're the people's police going out and you run into a situation like that. Our orientation has to be that we would sooner die ourselves than wantonly kill one of the people, even one, or maybe especially one, who's mentally disturbed. That has to be our orientation. If you're part of the people's security that's there to really serve and protect the people, then you put your life on the line, and if you have to, you lay your life down instead of and before you would ever be thinking of brutalizing any of the people. But that is not going to happen under this system, and that's why we got to get rid of this system.
All right, that was Babovakian from his dialogue with Cornel West several years back called Revolution and Religion, the Fight for Emancipation and the Role of Religion. And it's just a short sample, but a taste of what revolutionary state power is good for. Why the masses of people urgently need a revolution and a new state power, and why we are calling on you to join the thousands getting organized now to make this revolution, to lead millions in this rare time, to go for state power. Join the RevComs.
And that brings us to the end of another show here at the Michael Slate Show. I'd like to thank Andy Z and everybody at the Revolution Nothing Less Show, my assistant producer, Henry Carson, and all of you for tuning in. And again, check out the RevComs on YouTube at youtube.com/TheRevComs and follow at Babovakian Official on all your social media platforms. And remember, the problem is not human nature, it is the nature of the system. Through a real revolution, a better world is possible. My name is Sansara Taylor. I'll talk to you again next week.
Yeah.